beer kegs, demolishing saloons, and their enemy had a face, the face of a beer brewer named Charlie. What made him particularly dangerous, demonstrators insisted, was his promotional expertise. In fact, Charlie was one of America's very first national advertisers of anything. The bottled beer bearing his name went on the market in 1893. Within weeks, the Women's Christian Temperance Union launched an all-out campaign to get Charlie, to make him stop brewing and selling that beer of his, without ever asking or perhaps even imagining the rest of the story. Now it's 20 years previous. Newlywed, Charlie and his bride are on their honeymoon. The young man's already a prosperous Philadelphia pharmacist. He owns his own drugstore, so the couple can afford to spend their honeymoon just about anywhere. But they have selected a peaceful farm in New Jersey, sort of a 19th century bed and breakfast. Now, the farmer is also a home brewer, and his recipe for home brew, as it were, is in Charlie's estimation extraordinary. So the young druggist asks the farmer if he might have that recipe to take back home with him. Farmer says he'd be delighted. His wife writes down the ingredients on a piece of paper, and that's that. Charlie's pharmacy continued to thrive. But for years, he experimented with the farmer's formula, not hoping to improve it exactly, but rather to package the secret ingredients in their proper proportions so that customers could homebrew their own beer. And Charlie premiered his product in 1876 at the Philadelphia Centennial Exposition. Packets sold for 25 cents apiece, enabling buyers to make beer for 5 cents a gallon. But temperance advocates did not get riled or even take notice until many years later, when Charlie began marketing bottled beer coast to coast. That's when they came after him in newspaper ads and letters to the editor, in private rebukes and public demonstrations. Charlie was naturally distressed by the widespread objections to his product. Charlie was a Quaker. He was personally disinclined toward anything intoxicating, toward anything mood-altering. He even refused to put caffeine in his beer. In fact, calling his product beer, that was not even Charlie's idea at all. That was the suggestion of a friend, Dr. Russell Conwell, the founder of Temple University. And it was he, Dr. Conwell, who advised that sophisticated city folk might not be sufficiently intrigued by something called herb tea, so he suggested that it be called beer. Well, Charlie packaged and eventually bottled the beverage based on 16 different wild roots and wild berries under the name Root Beer, and the WCTU, finding non-alcoholic beer inconceivable, attacked Charlie, attacked the soft drink, which they were sure was a hard drink, for many years thereafter. And to this day, the recipe born on a New Jersey farm remains pretty much the same. But the next time you take a sip of root beer, you're going to remember the wrath of the Kerry Nationites raining down for most of a decade on an innocent entrepreneur named Charlie. Charles E. Hires root beer? Yep, now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guests are three really good friends of mine, Jay Leach, Kaylin Clark, and Jake Frederick. And we are all part of a group that we formed about a year or so ago called MGGS, the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society. And we are today going to have a multi-generational discussion of issues facing our country today. Culture, misinformation, disinformation, family, public policy, and health. We're going to even throw in there some education for you as well. And we're going to learn how Gen Xers and millennials view the state of play in the United States, in the world. So Jake, Kaylin, and Jay, welcome back to Protecting What Matters.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us back.
You're there with
us? Thanks, Barry.
Hey, Jake, glad to have you on the line. Jake is calling it in Kalen and Jay are here in studio with me. So call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775-238-KPRL. So just before we get started here, a couple of things. I have been asked to participate as a speaker tomorrow on Thursday night at a seminar called Future Proofing Your Life. I'm going to be appearing with Stephanie Nathaniel, who is an estate planning attorney, and Connor Sandman, who's with Edward Jones. And we're going to be at the Cal Coast Brewery. And if you want to learn more about this, we're going to be talking about estate planning, insurance solutions, and financial management. You can register online by going to futureproofingyourlife.eventbrite.com. Or if you send me an email at info@blazonbear.com, I'll be happy to send you that link. The event will start at 5:30, so come and join us and have a beer and learn about some things that are pretty darn important to you. So before we get started with our discussion with the guys, I just want to give I want to give us all some context here, not only for our conversation, but I also want to bring the audience into how our group operates. We all were part of a business networking group, but we just decided we wanted to talk about other stuff other than business. So we formed the MGGS, and we kind of look at current events and history and what's going on in the world from the concept of generational history. I've mentioned this many times before about Strauss and Howe, but this is who've been writing books about this since the early 90s. But let me give you the high end. It all deals with historical cycles, and there are basically four historical cycles. The high, which follows the crisis that ended the previous cycle. This period is typified by strong institutions and social collectivism. Think post-World War II. Then you have an awakening. This period is typified by increasing personal and spiritual autonomy of people. You think about the late 50s into the 60s and the 70s. Then the unraveling, which is a period typified by weak institutions that are distrusted. You could probably figure that this probably all started in the 90s and into the early 2000s, mid-2000s, and then the crisis. This is the era that we're currently in today. It's an era of destruction, potentially through war or other institutional decay, and the old institutions are gone. However, when the period ends, which hopefully will be soon, institutions will be rebuilt, society will rediscover the benefits of being part of a collective, and community purpose will take precedence. And then we head back into a high. Now, these cycles, these historical cycles, are also have the same kind of a sequence of generations. So the boomers, who are the profit generation, were born at the end of the crisis. The Gen Xers were the nomad generation, who were born during an awakening. The millennials, and so Jake is a Gen Xer. He's a late wave Gen Xer. The millennials, and I have two late wave millennials here, are actually the hero generation of the seculum, of the cycle. Again, the GI generation, who fought World War II, was a millennial generation as well. And then you have the artist generation, which is Gen Z. So, and we actually have a couple of Gen Zers in our group, but we don't get to see them very often, but they're great young men and very interesting as well. So with that in mind, guys, let's get into the topics here. I'm always interested on how you gather or consume information and news, you know, because it's a lot different than how I do it as a boomer, okay? So let's start with Jake on the line. Jake, how do you... what informs your thinking on various different issues?
Yeah, so primarily it's online and newspaper. A lot of the information I ingest is around topics that I have interest in or professionally have interest in. So most of it is digital, only one subscription. And the rest can be found either through Facebook, getting alerts from our community, or, you know, updates and stuff based on interests that I've either followed channels on through YouTube, or, you know, personalities, some influencers that, you know, speak directly to things that I've been working on with my family or in life.
What newspapers do you read?
So there's the local, our local newspaper that I get, I grab from, you know, when I grab coffee, I'll grab that. You know, being a Southern California kid, I read the Los Angeles Times, I read a lot of it online, and I have a online subscription to that. And, the Tribune, which is local, and then the rest is just, on from channels and online.
Okay. So you have a mix. What about you, Caleb?
Well, I would say a lot of it's online for sure. The different social media platforms have news outlets on those platforms that, you know, peddle their own news and information they want you to see.
So it's curated.
From what, you know, a lot of what I've noticed, a lot of it is generally you can tell that it's not, if it's not going to have that tag at the end where it's an obvious agenda, mm-hmm. what they're trying to push. But yeah, a lot of social media, a lot of online. I think I can speak for both Jay and I when I say that neither of us have really ever sought out a newspaper for information. That's not something that we do.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. What about you, Jay?
I try and stay unfocused on what's going on. I think that for me, in my opinion, is that if you're going to tune into what's going on around the world, then you should have the means to try and address these worldly problems. And for me, I'm more focused on myself and my family. And so I really try and just focus on what's going on in my local community and then maybe some things I see online. But for the most part, it's all things, in my opinion, that are there to install fear in your mind. And so I just try to stay away from it and focus on what's going on around me.
What do any of you listen at all to any of the cable news, the legacy media news channels or the cable news channels?
No, not really.
That's what my parents call real news.
Real news. What about you, Jake?
I would say maybe 5% is viewed, and most of that stuff is viewed online. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because there are channels that kind of like talk about how the news is being presented. I think there are a lot of online channels that propagate the message that traditional media and news is not relevant. You know, mm-hmm. they see the news anchor or the weather person, and then your eyes roll over because it's more, there's an entertainment value to it that I think younger generations just don't see the value in. It's not one channel that you subscribe to every day and listen to, and my parents definitely do that. And, yeah, it's not something I spend a lot of time in.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Now, let me ask you this. So real quickly, we'll start with our resident cynic millennial, Jay, here. Talk to me about misinformation, disinformation, the differences between them. And then as we move into that, then, of course, we have deep fakes and cheap fakes. So give our listeners who don't, you know, I mean, we hear these terms all the time, but, what are these all about? What's this all about?
Yeah, I think misinformation or disinformation, it's kind of like what I was saying, why I don't tune into a lot of what's going on in the news, whether it be social media or the mainstream platforms. A lot of the time, specifically on social media, you can find a clip or a video where it could be a politician or some official saying something, or it'll be a caption saying that they stand for something, and it's just completely inaccurate, that either they never said it or it's taking what they said out of context. And that happens on both ends. But a lot of the reason I stay away from it is it's really hard to, even me being a younger individual, differentiate between what is a real clip or a real video or real information and then what is just something that somebody essentially doctored to prove a point and push an agenda.
Yeah. So, Kalen, you're a tech guy.
Yep.
So
yep.
Tell us what your thoughts are on this whole
issue. So I think that the misinformation and disinformation has existed long before even AI came out. Like Jabari was saying, it's it's easy to doctor clips. It's easy to doctor documents, anything really online. Mm-hmm. It's all changeable. And so I think that a lot of the older generations have a feeling that when AI came out, all of these really deep fakes and easier things to fake are really prevalent. But in reality, those existed far before AI even came out.
Mm-hmm.
Just the nature of the internet, to be honest. Anybody can post anything and change anything they want.
Well, and Jake, I mean, you and I are probably closer to each other than as to how we consume information, even though, I mean, I'm all, because of what I'm doing for the show, I'm constantly researching stuff online.
And I'll share an interesting thought when we get to it a little later on about something I found when I looked up one of our later topics today. But how do you filter out? I mean, how do you discern when you, you know, see something that doesn't look quite right online?
Yeah, you know, I will say that AI has come a long way in trying to create these pathways for misinformation. But I also think I'm not really worried about my generation being able or easily, I would guess, tricked in situations. I'm more worried about a generation that isn't used to using it as their primary source. I feel like there's a generation that Kaylin spoke very, you know, detailed about, is that there's a generation that has a deep amount of mistrust about it. But the reality is information is so tangible now. So just as you use a mix to get prepared for the show, an individual who needs some quick information about something off topic could receive 2 to 3 ads that lead them down, you know, 15 to 20 minutes of reading that's all completely false. So I think there is mistrust because the internet is very good at captivating you. And I think there should be that level of mistrust, just as there should be in most forms of media. So I think the way the internet kind of brings you in and the way social media draws you and your attention, I think those are what creates these channels of misinformation, because they have ways, you know, more deep state stuff, but technology has come a long way in creating ways to captivate you and entertain you.
You guys have any follow-ups on this?
Yeah, I think it's all curated. It's about the user experience.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's companies that are seeking your attention, seeking your time, seeking your money. And so, you know, what you see online, a lot of it is curated towards, you know, how can we get you to spend some money, or how can we get you to think a certain type of way?
Yeah, but...
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's a little bit more prevalent than people understand. I think we were talking about this when we came out and we're splitting some wood up at your house, Barry. Mm-hmm. When you're on social media, a lot of people don't realize that even the comments that you're seeing on a post are curated towards what your typical viewing habits are. So it's not just what's on your newsfeed, but it's the responses to what you're seeing on your newsfeed. So that's going to go, again, both ways, kind of pushing you towards what you're already feeling. It's like confirmational bias is really the goal.
Yes. So interestingly, and we'll get to this topic in the next segment, but when I started looking up the MAHA movement, the Make America Healthy Again movement, mm-hmm. I used a couple of different browsers, and just to see what was there, most of the first 5 or 6 or 7 articles were all about what a jerk Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is.
Right.
And then I had to get to the second or third click button
right.
to get something that was really more informational.
Relevant.
It was relevant. And so people have to be very wary of these web browsers, right?
Yeah, even the search engines.
Google or Edge or whatever. Yep. That's what I meant. Okay. So basically, we've created a Tower of Babel for ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, real quickly, one more topic on this. And do you guys pay much attention to influencers? How about, let's start again with Jay.
Not for factual information when it comes to what's going on in the world. Because again, it's all, they're there to monetize mm-hmm. their viewership. So it's all money driven. They're there to capture attention and push whatever their beliefs are. Sometimes good, sometimes not the best, but not for me. A lot of the influencers I follow are going to be more for like, maybe like DIY projects or like workout routines, okay. Simple things like that.
Kaylin, I mean, do you think Gen Zers are more prone to listening to influencers than you guys are?
For sure. It's interesting because influencers have sort of existed even long before the internet did. But what's different now is they've almost 10x'd, where there's all these influences for all these different niches and topics and hobbies and all these things. So, I mean, the internet has just exploded that influence market. But I personally don't.
Enjoy
watching them too much, unless it's for a hobby. But
yeah, okay. But so again, I mean, again, this is kind of more towards the next generation coming up. You think,
right?
Yeah, it's really big for them.
So this kind of and again, you know, Jake, I mean, you've got 4 little kids at home, you know, and we're going to talk about this here in a second. But you know, are you keeping them away from electronic devices and that kind of stuff so they're not You know, I have two grandsons, and I see him in front of their iPads way too much, I believe, you know. But in my generation, I would put the kid in front of the TV, though, right? To get a few minutes of peace.
Yeah.
What do you do in that regard? This regard?
Yeah, over the years, I think there have been, better tools that have come out for parents and better ways to manage that time. We try to do screen time as educational time. So we have an app, it's called ABC Mouse. It gives them access to, you know, stories and information, and it's interactive, and it allows them to learn in an environment where it's fun and it's not, you know, it's not a zombie experience where they're just staring at something, which we all know that. We've seen a kid that's enthralled in a show. Like a bomb could go off behind them and they'd be totally absorbed in that moment. So I like the interactive component to the stuff that we're giving them screen time wise. I think just allowing them to aimlessly browse or giving them unlimited access, I think is extremely problematic because it starts to build habits. And, my kids, I don't think are in a phase where, you know, they see what influencers are. I think they're insulated enough from the way, you know, my diligent wife and I try to raise our kids is we want them to enjoy their youth. We want them to be, you know, in the world interacting and not absorbed by a screen. I even noticed my oldest, you know, we were watching a Disney movie and it's unbelievable how real it is when a mind hasn't developed, when they're watching a movie. Mm-hmm. Like she was shaking in a scene where, you know, it was a villain and then it was, you know, this really developed scene that took, you know, 10 minutes to develop this pinnacle moment. You know, I believe that their brains can't really distinguish that reality from non-reality. So, you know,
yep.
It definitely makes me want to be diligent.
Jake, I'm going to put you on hold for a couple of minutes. I got the bumper music coming up, and then we'll get back to these topics. Folks, stand by. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Former President Trump continues on the campaign trail today, telling the Economic Club of Chicago his plan aimed at increasing domestic production and boosting jobs.
We're going to lower taxes still further for companies that are going to make their product in the USA. We're going to protect those companies with strong tariffs.
Vice President Harris has criticized increased tariffs, suggesting the cost will get pushed on a consumer. She'll sit for a town hall today in Detroit, hosted by Charlemagne the God. Both campaigns heavily focused on battleground Pennsylvania.
The running mates hold competing events in Pennsylvania today. Republican Senator J.D. Vance is in the Philadelphia suburbs for an event billed as a Moms for America town hall. Democrat Tim Walz is in western Pennsylvania, appealing to rural voters.
Fox's Jared Halpern. America is listening to Fox News.
We see you there, stuck in traffic, maybe a cubicle, daydreaming about an escape, a place where infinite horizons mean more freedom. We're going big this October at Chumash Casino Resort, giving away over $500,000 in cash and prizes. That's something. Everything you need to find yourself elsewhere. Drawings every Sunday. Earn entries now. And hey, welcome to freedom. Must be present to win. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Jay, Jake, and Kalen, part of the MGGS, Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society. We talk about topics, cultural, political, and whatnot, and electronic. And just a case in point of what we were just talking about, this is from the Daily Wire, my Daily Wire news feed. But basically, CBS caught selectively editing another Republican. Looks like it's the Speaker Johnson. And so that this is also breaking. It's an ongoing thing that we are just getting the heck curated out of us. Let me just finish up the topic, you guys, of smartphones, because I do want to move on to these other topics. But again, there's been a lot of talking about it on the show before with Jenny Griniger in particular, about the deleterious impact of smartphones on kids. Jonathan Haidt basically has done a lot of research on how this has negatively impacted young people's mental health, you know, caused a lot of depression amongst people. And you wanted to talk a little bit about mental health in the younger generations.
Yeah, sure.
What are your thoughts on this? Let's start with Jay here and talk about your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think the amount of screen time or cell phone use is really interesting. Something I recently saw is they're adjusting the expectation for young kids as far as holding full conversations. I have a friend whose mom has been a teacher for over 15 years, and she's talking about how she teaches a fifth grade class now, and they can't even count on their fingers. And before, she had first and second graders that were doing that. So I think it's undeniable that the screen time and the phones and just having access to all of that, kids are just not being involved in the real world. They're just kind of sucked into a screen, and that has a big effect on their ability to grow up and their brains to develop.
I just saw an article about from an anthropologist about how kids playing directly with each other and roughhousing and, you know, dealing with their, you know, interaction without phones involved, how so, you know, we're hardwired to be like that, and the whole phone thing has interrupted that process when
right.
you're in
yep.
school. What do you think, Caleb?
Yeah, I think that's 100% it. You know, when we grew up, we had a few years where there were no phones, and that wasn't really a problem. And then as early as sixth grade, they started getting introduced. By seventh grade, eighth grade, we had smartphones. And then obviously social media got really popular as we went into high school. And, you know, we had some time to adjust and had some time to prepare for that. We already were a little bit developed before, you know, that started to have an impact. But the younger generations are completely molded and, you know, enthralled in what's going on. Social media is completely domineering over their lives.
Do you think the Gen Zers are having regrets about how they've been immersed into these
yet? I don't think they even
they don't have perspective.
They don't even understand what's happening. And that's declining mental health significantly. And it's really scary to see, you know, how the generations before us come up and when they start, you know, running the nation, what's it going to be like?
Right.
You know?
It's going to be a problem. Yeah. Jake, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I think my main concern, having young ones that are entering into school, is critical thinking and their ability to process information and take detailed notes regarding it. If the information is fed and it's semi-entertaining, semi, you know, channeled towards this curation, which you guys are using, you know, the word curation over it, I think it's hard to have a child take in, you know, regular information and be critical and thought on it, because the message already has components to it that make it, you know, influential on the individual. Where I remember news when I was really young, you know, it was extremely dry and, you know, it's detailed. I don't think information now that's being disseminated is very detailed. I think it would lose people. And so the messaging is around what is going to get a click, what is going to keep somebody on a page. All these things are now metrics that larger media corporations, they have all that information. They know the average time, you know, a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old is going to be able to withhold information from a video or from information, and they use that to their advantage to curate the message that keeps them on that page.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, let's move on. I really want to talk about and get your take on the loss of faith in our institutions, government, religion, education, media. We've talked a bunch about already, medicine. And it's becoming, it's very apparent that we're in a generational winter, you know, the crisis time in the generational seculum, as it were, or cycle. I think a lot of this started in the 1960s. Again, of course, with boomers, and unfortunately, and in and it kind of puts two things together, you know, the whole notion of deconstructionism and moral relativism. Nothing means anything anymore in any way, shape, or form. You can make, you know, a man can be a woman. You know, that was a topic I was going to throw in about, what do you think about men and women's sports? But we'll take that on in another, we'll take that on in another show. So let me ask you this. I mean, at this point, and let's start with Jake, how confident are you? And I know you just had you told me about it. It's a situation this morning that you can share or not. How confident are you that the institutions we've established can be relied on, Jake?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a really big question. I believe that there are a lot of really good intentioned individuals working within the system, and I believe that these people work tirelessly and hard towards raising and providing for kids. You know, the concept of faith and, you know, how a child can identify in their life, I think, you know, goes a completely other step. You know, just in my current life, we're grappling with all that in the community and what we want for our child. And, you know, I think everyone has to make their own individual decision, and based on what they have resource available to them is really going to dictate a lot of that. But I do believe that the further we've gone away from, you know, allowing, you know, faith to be a part of our educational system, the further away we're getting from a program and system where individuals treat each other the way I believe they should be.
Yeah. What about you, Kalen? What are your thoughts on this?
I think with everything so money-driven and so obviously money-driven that it's hard. I sympathize with the younger generations and our generation for losing faith in a lot of institutions, just because it seems like these corporations and these executives and shareholders are just making so much money that, you know, why not go further and influence more and control more? And it's easy for us to lose faith in that type of stuff. But I think our generations and our country is sort of losing this strong sense of moral compass. And it's so important to clearly identify what's right and what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think that's completely been blurred because everybody gets to kind of make up their own truth and their own identity and everything they want to just create it themselves. And it just kind of muddles the water a bit as far as what direction we should be going.
Okay, so and as a late wave millennial, you're hanging out a lot with early wave Gen Zers. What's your sense of where they're at on this whole thing?
Well, I mean, most of the people I've interacted with throughout my life have always been older than me.
Okay,
so, but at the same time, I do see a lot of that generation. I think they're really strong about, like, don't tell me how to live, don't tell me what to do, don't tell me what gender I am, don't tell me what I should do for work. You know, distrust, distrust, distrust. It's really prevalent. It's not like, you know, I think it was like the 70s or late 60s when people were really trying to stand out for themselves and be independent. It seems like it's doing that now, but almost they're going downhill and they don't realize it, is what it seems like.
Yeah, it's a different part time of the cycle.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the institutions were still strong enough then to withstand what the boomers are trying to do to it.
Yeah.
But now it's all been torn down after, you know, really, I mean, that's really what's happened. Jay, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Gen Z is really interesting. I don't know. I think that there'll be a great artist generation as fits their archetype. But as far as everything else, I don't know. It's kind of similar to Kalen. I don't really spend a lot of time with them. So I don't really have a good understanding of what their perspective is outside of just what I see on social media and kind of here and there.
And but as our resident cynic, you don't have much trust in the institutions at this point yourself.
No, not at all. I think that our institutions, I think they mean well, but power it's enticing. And I mean, often once you have it, you don't want to let it go and you just want more of it. And so right now, information is power, data is power. And so it's just a fight to see who can control the majority of the information.
Well, and we'll get to this in the last segment, but this is really apparent in the presidential election, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
All right. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to switch to health. Now, I consider you guys part of my longevity team, okay, along with my doctors. I mean, so folks, these guys, I mean, they're coaching me all the time on, you know, weight loss and exercise and all this kind of stuff. I want you to know I'm now using that, what was the stuff?
The creatine.
And actually, I can see a difference after a few days. It's really cool. So these guys are, I don't know, for some reason they want me to hang around for a while. So I'm trying to make the last 15 or 20 years of my life as good as possible. So if I had known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. but that being said, I want to talk about to me one of the positive things that came out of the COVID-19 nonsense is really the MAHA movement, the Make America Healthy movement again. And of course, this is now becoming a national movement. It's being led by folks like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RFKJ, as he's called, Nicole Shanahan, who was his running mate when he was running as independent. And I have to tell you, I heard her on the Megyn Kelly podcast, and I was really impressed with her, not so much with all of her positions, because I don't know what all of her, but she was a clear thinker. She processed information in a way that I could understand. And then I guess it's Casey and Callie Means who have been doing a lot of work in this whole area. So basically, the themes included in this movement are corporate capture of our food supply and processing, overuse of pesticides, factory farming, big pharma, and basically all of this is fueling a lot of our chronic illnesses. You know, a lot of problems for kids in particular. You know, people who are getting, so it's really driving obesity, diabetes, autoimmune diseases, autism, cancer, mental illness, which is really at a record level for even amongst young people. So let's start with you, Jake. You know, you've got arms like legs. You work out really on a regular basis. So tell us a little bit about what your thoughts are about keeping yourself healthy and keeping your family healthy.
Yeah. First thing I'll say is food is medicine. I don't believe that exercise without diet or diet without exercise leads you to where you want to go. You know, fortunately, my wife is a gardener, and her and I love cooking, and we, you know, participate in the food cycle. We have chickens. So we want to enjoy food, but we also want to do it where we can benefit from that food. I think exercise, you know, it has to be fun. You know, I remember younger playing basketball or, you know, pickup games or football or, you know, I would say that the way you stick with any kind of exercise routine is that it's fun, relatively easy, and you can socialize. I think if it hits those marks, however you realize it, I think you have a really good chance of it being something long-term where it can be enjoyable.
And you get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to go to the gym and work out. That's your level of dedication to staying healthy, right?
Yeah. I have a busy life.
Yeah.
So I try to accomplish, you know, some of the things that I believe I deserve. I tell myself I deserve that time. I deserve to exercise. I deserve to be healthy. You're being good to yourself tomorrow by doing what you need to be doing today. So, getting up I'm at the gym by 5 a.m. You know, I'm working in a classroom setting where I have other people that are working towards their goals. It's social. It's fun. You know, there's some accountability in that cycle. So, yeah, I've really enjoyed those mornings.
All right. And Jay, what about you? What are your thoughts on this topic?
Health is wealth. And you can have all the money or be as successful as you want, but you're not around to enjoy it, then it doesn't really matter. Right now, our company is all about that. So Central Coast Moving, we've had, over the past couple months, we've had a 10,000 step a day challenge. We've had a 10-pound weight loss challenge. And recently went out and speaking of influencers, there's a big influencer, Andy Elliott, who's one of the number one sales coaches, online influencers, really out right now. And my team went out there beginning of the month, and it's a 2-day training seminar. And first day is nothing but a workout, because that's really the message that, that he pushes and that we're subscribing to right now, is you got to stay healthy. And that starts, like Jake said, you have to have the diet and you have to exercise. So myself and my team, we've been going to the gym, kind of similar schedule to Jake, waking up at 4:30, getting there by 5, and then headed into the office, just really trying to lock in and stay busy.
Great. Well, yeah, you guys are very active.
Trying to be.
Yeah, you're very active. What about you, Caitlin? I mean, you sit a lot. You sit at desks a lot, don't you?
I do a lot of moving around.
Do you?
I mean, I do sit at desks when I'm working on computers, but generally I fix a problem within a few minutes or seconds, so I don't spend much time on the computer and move on to the next. I'm very grateful that I've been on the health game for quite a while now. So it's not too difficult for me to rein in my urges and, you know, stay consistent to a diet, stay consistent to health. I think doing yoga is incredible, and especially hot yoga. And if you're someone who struggles,
hot yoga,
yeah, it's really good for your body. It's good for your mental health. If you're someone that struggles with chronic pain, and you want to make sure in the long run, by the time you're 50, 60, 70 years old, that you're still feeling okay, I'd recommend you start yoga immediately and do it at least a couple times a week.
What is hot yoga?
So hot yoga is essentially, I mean, it's yoga, right? But it's in a room that is
hot,
humidified.
Okay.
Usually about 100, between 95 and 105 degrees.
So you're doing yoga in a steam bath.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
Because it gives your muscles the chance to really stretch out and loosen up. And then it's much of a workout as well. So cardiovascular, it's very good for you. I think it's easy for people to eat unhealthily because they make it cheap. And if people realized how many brands that large corporations owned, I think they might think twice about going and buying some Kit Kats or
Apple Jacks.
Yeah, Apple Jacks or whatever they're eating all
right.
the time.
You know, right. It's really that glycemic level, high fructose levels in foods and
sugar intake.
Yeah, in doing some research for this, I'm just amazed. And again, I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, over the decades, have been eating a lot of crap.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And that isn't even allowed in most other countries.
In a lot of other countries, yeah. I mean, like I was telling you before the show, I found out just exactly how many companies just one large tobacco company owns, mm-hmm. and it's all the big brands that you would not think that they own, or it's a cascading effect where they own Kraft, and then Kraft owns all these other brands. Heinz owns these brands, and they own Heinz. And, mm-hmm. You know, they're making all the food your children are eating. And
do you think they're using the same techniques that they use to addict people to cigarettes that they're using
almost
to do with
certainly,
food?
Almost certainly, yeah. It's a combination of marketing towards children, and mm-hmm. They're molecularly engineering this food. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Jake, when you took the four kids to the fair this year, I was with you. That was fun watching them go nutty at the fair. But, how did you keep them from eating things you didn't want to eat? I want that, Daddy. I want that. That's hard, isn't it?
It definitely is. There's definitely marketing to kids. It's probably the fastest growing marketing wing of any organization that's, mm-hmm. Multinational, is that they are marketing to that generation because they know they are creating buy-in customers for the long haul. Schools try to have no sugar on campus. They try to not do cupcakes, for birthdays, do cards or something else. I think it is and will be the main challenge, because food now is engineered to be tasty. It's right. not engineered to be nutritious. So, right. Taste and flavor and salt and sugar, this sells, and that's what they're in the business of doing, is selling food. So parents just have to be really cognitive and willing to, lose the battle but win the war, I feel like.
Yeah. I'm always amazed. I mean, I always feel, because I'm sure I did this when I was a kid, but when I see a parent going through the market with the kids screaming, I want this, I want this. I mean, it's very embarrassing, isn't it? Has that ever happened to you or Kate?
Oh, you know what? I think our kids are actually pretty darn good. We feel fortunate. When we take them shopping, there is an expectation of how, how they're supposed to behave. Mm-hmm. We want our kids to represent us as well.
Hey, Jake, so. I got a hard break coming up, so I'm going to put you on hold again. I knew it was coming up, so stand by, folks. We'll be right back in about 3 minutes.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stiefel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stiefel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Adidas, boosting its full-year outlook after reporting better-than-expected quarterly results. The German sportswear company is currently going through a revamp that has seen an increase in its sales. LVMH falling short of revenue expectations. The French luxury empire blaming the decline on lower demand worldwide, especially in China. LVMH owns Louis Vuitton and Dior, among other high-end brands. Albertsons' quarter was better than expected. The grocery store giant's earnings were lower but topped forecasts. And revenue was both higher than a year ago and upbeat. And the stock market tanking Tuesday. The Dow ending down 325 points, S&P 500 down 45, and the NASDAQ down 187. And that's your Fox Business Report. I'm Laura Cantor, invested in you.
Hey, Donald Trump Jr. here. Central banks are buying gold at record amounts, and the trend is accelerating in 2024. They see the writing on the wall. The dollar is failing. Is gold the answer for you too? To find out, get a free info kit from Birch Gold Group by texting the word SHELTER to 989898. That's SHELTER to the number 989898 to get your free info kit from Birch Gold, the only gold company I trust, right now.
Message and data rates may apply.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stiefel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stiefel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stiefel, 238-3080.
Driven to be the best.
The veteran-owned Ted Miles Motors in Atascadero.
The cars you want, the people you like.
Serving you for 49 consecutive years.
Just plain good deals without the hype.
Ted Miles Motors, same location since 1975.
Selling cars the way it should be.
Ted Miles Motors, in business for 49 years, has sold over 13,000 vehicles and is the longest established used car dealer in San Luis Obispo County. So whether buying or selling a car, truck, van, SUV, motorhome, or classic car, visit their easy-to-navigate website, TedMilesMotors.com, or their showroom, 7380 El Camino Real in Atascadero, next to Farrell's Auto Repair.
Driven to be the best.
10 Miles Motors, Atascadero.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Jay Leach and Kaylin Clark. Jake Frederick had to jump off our show today. He had something come up at the office, but we'll have all three of these guys back in the coming months because, there's to me, again, they give us a lot of great insights. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week's show is going to feature Henry Rogers, chief national correspondent from the Daily Caller. We're going to be talking pre-election stuff. We'll be 2 weeks out from the election, and so there's lots of news. And then in the hour segment, we're going to have Dave Belmont of Adler Belmont Group. He's, of course, the sponsor of this show, and his company, he and his company are. He's going to be talking a little bit about what's going on in the property casualty markets, you know, for auto and homeowners insurance. There might be some good news percolating down from Sacramento at some point before the end of the year. And then he's also on the board of directors of the Atascadero Police Foundation. So we're going to be joined by Scott Pippen, who is the president of the Atascadero Police Foundation. And we're going to be talking about what's going on with that. It's a new nonprofit, and they're doing some great stuff for the community down in Atascadero. Again, I want to remind you again, as I mentioned, I'm part of a workshop series called Future Proofing Your Life with Estate Planning, Insurance Solutions, and Financial Management. We're doing a seminar at 5:30 on Thursday night at the California Coast Brewing Company. And in Paso Robles, you can register. We'd love to see you. We got room for you. futureproofingyourlife.eventbrite.com or email me your email. Send me an email and I'll shoot you the link. Okay, guys, in the last 5 minutes or so that we have left, generational. So I got my two young millennials here, late wave millennials. What are the issues that you're tracking on? Let's start with Jay. What are the issues that you're tracking on in this year's election? State, local, national, whatever you want.
I guess my main issue is the candidate for the Democrats that's didn't really fairly run. She was appointed by Biden. I think that Trump has been running fairly from start to finish. But if I was gonna wage a bet, I would still bet that Kamala is gonna win. I think people are gonna be frustrated about it, and I think it's gonna be an interesting following years. But I do truly think that if I were going to wage a bet, that's who I'd put my money on.
Even though the polls are kind of moving in the other direction at this
point. Yeah.
What makes you think that? You think the fix is in?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of that mainly. I think that the institutions, Trump was a big disruptor when he was our president. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that people are ready for that disruption again. And I think there's going to be a lot of effort to prevent it again. I think that she's got quite the war chest coming from, and it's scary to me because the same people supporting her are the same people that were supporting Biden to be our president. And Biden, as we saw in that debate, was not at full mental capacity. And so why are they now okay with supporting her is kind of my question that I ask myself. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it goes.
Kalen, what are your thoughts? What are the issues or what are you focusing on as we move into the last few weeks? For the election.
I mean, it goes to the election. I think I'm just sort of watching both sides and sort of just observing to see what happens. But I think California needs a huge shift in its policies. They're pretty ridiculous. as someone who, you know, would like to own multiple properties and go into renting, I've heard some interesting chatter about laws that are going to greatly affect people who are renting, homeowners that are renting. And they're taking quite a lot of power away from people who own the house, which I think is strange. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know why a renter would have more authority and power over someone that owns a property. But that's just one of many laws that I think California needs to adjust. We need to swing the other way a little bit here. But yeah, as far as the election goes, I think that the Democrats are really trying to just save the race. And that's as soon as they realized how bad it was with Biden, it was almost like they planned it. And as soon as everything like that debate came out, it was sort of intentional. And then they were like, all right, well, now we'll make Kamala look really good as the new candidate. So kind of seemed like it was planned and calculated, to be honest. But at this point, I would agree with Jay that it's more than likely that she'll win. And it'll be an interesting few years after that. But there's so many problems for us to consider.
Yeah.
It's hard to pick one.
So if Kamala wins, mm-hmm. do you think we're going to see violence from the MAGA movement?
I don't think violence, mm-hmm. Demonstration, mm-hmm. which is to be, you know, encouraged. I think we should be willing to voice our opinions. I've seen a lot of clips on the internet talking where Kamala is talking about censoring platforms and censoring the internet in certain ways, and these companies need to be held accountable. And that's really scary because we need to have the ability to speak our minds. And, you know, like if you say something to somebody and they're offended, you shouldn't get arrested, which kind of seems like that's the route we're going if Kamala gets elected. The firearms thing is weird, too, where she said, you know, she thinks that firearms should be greatly restricted. But then she's, you know, if someone breaks into her house that she's going to shoot them. I saw that clip online, and obviously that could have been doctored or fake, but.
We got a call here, guys. So welcome to Protecting What Matters, and we're up against it here. Actually, it's the end of the show. I'm sorry. You want to ask a quick question or not?
What did he mean that Trump was a disruptor?
Well, okay. That's a great question. You know, we'll take that on the next week's show. So much for that. Okay, folks. Well, listen, it's been a fast-moving hour and a half. Kalen and Jay, thanks. We'll do this again. And Jake, wherever you are, thanks for calling in. I'll look forward, folks, to talking to you next week. Thanks so much.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Temple.